If your social media feeds are anything like mine, you're seeing all kinds of ads promoting creams and lotions to make you look younger and supplements and products to make you feel younger. But do they actually work? This is Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. Joining me now to talk about the booming health and beauty market and whether you can believe the claims are cosmetic chemist and University of Cincinnati adjunct professor Kelly Dobos, UC College of Pharmacy associate professor Ann Metzger, and Yasmin Tayag, a staff writer for The Atlantic. Thank you all so much for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
So how big has the beauty and wellness market gotten, Yasmin? I mean, let's start with supplements. How much has that market grown?
It's pretty enormous. It is in the, you know, I think tens of billions worth at this point. And you can just see it for yourself as a consumer. You know, before, supplements used to be, you know, largely sequestered to supplement-focused specialty stores. But now you're seeing them at Target or Walmart or, you know, your local CVS. And there's such a huge range of products being pushed that it can be hard to sort through what's real and what's not.
Yeah, that's what we will try to do today, at least as much as we can. And Yasmin, what about the beauty industry? I mean, there are cosmetics and skincare. Has that market been growing off the charts too?
It also has grown in part because the market is growing. You know, obviously the beauty industry has always targeted women, but the age ranges that they're targeting now are widening. You know, there's been a lot of talk about the Sephora tweens products being pitched to kids under 13. There was a whole controversy last week about face masks for children. And, you know, I think the more consumers that the industry can convince need these things, you know, the more it's just going to keep growing.
Well, and men and boys are getting into these things too, aren't they, Kelly? Cosmetics, skincare, all that kind of stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, ever since I got into the industry, they were always talking about the you know, male market for cosmetics. And it's taken a long time to get there. And I do think, you know, skincare is important, sunscreen, moisturizers. But I think we're also seeing more men get into anti-aging routines.
Yeah. Well, let's get into some of the specific products and claims. I want to start with anti-aging and skincare products. And collagen sure is having a moment. And some of these collagen, some collagen comes in the form of supplements. I mean, what can you tell us about those? What are the claims? Do they really add up for these, for this collagen you ingest?
Right. I think there are a lot of claims for collagen doing a number of different things. And there is some evidence for collagen in certain areas. There is evidence for collagen that you ingest for joints, especially for athletes who might be either long-distance runners or lifting weights, that it can improve joints and recovery after that type of workout. In addition to skincare, it does have some data for improving skin elasticity and firmness, even when you ingest it.
Hmm. Kelly, what about the collagen that's an ingredient in different creams and stuff like that?
Sure. So collagen is, you know, it's a really big, I'd say, molecule. If you're talking about the natural collagen that's in your skin, it's made up of polypeptide chains that are wound together, three chains that form sort of like a rope-like structure, and then those aggregate into fibrils. And so it's really big. And topical collagen isn't able to penetrate your skin to get down to the deeper layers of your dermis where your collagen naturally is. So topical collagen is really, maybe it'll give you a little bit of moisturization, but it's not really going to replace the collagen that's deep in your dermis. So it's not, I would say, a very necessary cosmetic ingredient, in my opinion.
Okay. Well, we are talking about the booming health and beauty market for the full hour today. We've got experts here to answer your questions about all kinds of products. Give us a call at 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. So, Kelly, what about these products that promise to lift and firm your face? I mean, I've even seen a product described as like shapewear for your face.
Really, what is that about?
Sure. So we see lots of claims that are going to try to, you know, get you to turn your head and, you know, be interested in the product. But when it comes to, you know, cosmetic ingredients, they're topical and it's really hard to penetrate your skin. Your skin is actually a really good barrier. And a lot of these ingredients don't get down to where they need to be to have efficacy. So, you know, down in the dermis where your collagen and your elastin naturally are, it's really hard to get ingredients down there to penetrate. So a lot of topical things may improve the look and the appearance of your skin, but really improving that collagen and elastin once it's been degraded can be really hard to do. Now, there are some ingredients that we do know have a long history of use that will help boost collagen, and that's retinol and retinoids, and those are kind of the gold standard ingredients. Everything else, there's not so much data behind them to really show efficacy.
So these things you like strap under your chin and wrap around your ears, don't count on those to make you look 10 years younger?
Yeah, I don't know that I've seen a whole. I know those are used after medical procedures to help, you know, as your skin is healing. But sleeping with one of those on your head overnight, I don't know that you're going to really get a whole lot of benefits from that, except, you know, maybe giving a laugh to whomever you're
sleeping with, your dog, your cat, your
right.
partner, whoever it might be. Well, Yasmin, I've seen Seoul being described as the beauty mecca of the world. What kind of influence is the Korean beauty market having on all these different products and trends?
Yeah, the Korean beauty industry has really penetrated the U.S. market. And, you know, I think there is this perception and largely supported that Korean women have amazing skin. And, you know, it's being pitched to American audiences as a way to get that similar kind of skin. You know, you're seeing trends such as glass skin, which is this very smooth, glowy, kind of shiny look. You know, all sorts of ingredients are used in some of these products that, you know, seem new to us here in America. You know, we're seaweed extracts, ginkgo extracts. I'm not going to lie, I have a Korean beauty oil facial wash at home.
Do you like it?
I do like it. It makes me feel like I'm treating my skin to something special. Whether it is making me look any less tired, I can't say.
Does it at least smell good?
It does smell good, and it okay. smells a little, it has like a, it's just not a typical, you know, Western scent. It's not like flowers or citrus. It's more earthy, more herbal, and that kind of adds to the novelty of these products.
Yeah, and I would add here that there's another thing to think about, and too, you know, these Korean products are seen as a lot of times technologically superior, and I think there's, you know, many new ingredients that they're highlighting in these products. You know, snail mucin was one and is seen as a trendy and popular ingredient. But I think we also have to look at the cultural aspects of it too, is, you know, the Korean consumer has always been maybe better about practicing sun avoidance. And so their, you know, overall skin health, you know, may be different basically from a cultural perspective than here in the United States, where we've had decades of sun worshipers. And so, you know, looking to repair some of that damage instead of the Korean consumer having that protective aspect for such a long time.
Wow. See, that's a real bummer that you brought into the conversation, Kelly. But I appreciate that. I mean, there is a huge difference there. If you've been trying to get that tan for most of your life, making up for that damage can be difficult, right?
Right. And it's estimated that about 90% of our skin aging is due to those extrinsic factors like sun or smoking. You know, we have the intrinsic aging factors, and that's just what happens naturally. That's going to happen to everybody. But those extrinsic factors, you know, your UV exposure are what are going to accelerate that aging. So, you know, there's that all natural aging we're all going to experience, but some of those factors like sun exposure are really going to, you know, push that faster.
Yeah. You're not doing yourself any favors.
Please
go ahead, Yasmin.
A big part of the Korean beauty industry is sunscreens. The Korean beauty sunscreens are, I would say, generally seen as superior. And you know, I think that could be a positive thing if it's encouraging Western audiences to lather on the SPS. Yeah.
The Korean, they have access to many more sun filters than we have here in the United States, unfortunately. And that's a real challenge for our sunscreen formulators in the United States, is we have a really limited set of sunscreen active ingredients that we can use.
And why is that? Because of what's FDA approved here?
Right. In the United States, they're treated like drug products. So a sunscreen either has to follow the rules that are set for sunscreens that give you that kind of list of actives you can use and how much you can use, or you would have to go through a new drug application to get a new sunscreen approved. And that is a really long and difficult process. Good news, though, is next year we may have our first new sunscreen in about 20 years active ingredient here in the United States. It's called bimetrizinol. So keep an eye out for that news next year. I think around June, we're really hoping that approval will come through. So big news.
Yeah, just in time for summer next year, I guess. Okay. Well, again, we are talking about health and beauty for the full hour. We've got experts here. If you've got questions for the products you're being pitched on your social media feeds, give us a call at 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. Yasmin, what about cows and wellness? I mean, tell us about this beef tallow moisturizer. Have we entered a cow maxing era? What's going on here?
Oh, yes. As I wrote recently at The Atlantic, there seems to be a trend in the beauty and wellness industries that incorporates cow products into all sorts of, that incorporates cow-based ingredients into all sorts of products. So perhaps the most striking one is this idea that rather than the normal moisturizer you would buy from the store, it is better to use beef tallow, which is literally rendered beef fat, straight onto your face. And it is marketed as a more natural, a cleaner way to moisturize. And, you know, you'll see influencers all over social media claiming that switching to beef tallow as a moisturizer clears up their acne, it, you know, reduces irritation, it makes wrinkles disappear.
Are they just filled in with beef tallow?
I think so. It's a really waxy substance. So the beef tallow is a big thing, but there are also products, things that have been around for a long time, such as bone broth made from boiled beef bones. There is cow placenta that you can take in pills that claims to support healing after pregnancy. And in my research on this, the common theme of all these products is that they were seen as a more natural alternative. And, you know, given that there's a big push for clean, natural beauty these days, I think it's partially aligned with the message, the public health messages that are coming out of the CDC right now. Robert F. Kennedy Jr. has been really big on removing synthetic chemicals and eliminating processing from foods, but also from, you know, the everyday products that we use. And in this view, using a natural fat straight from an animal is superior to products that are made with all sorts of chemicals where we don't know where they come from.
And what about this consuming of placenta after pregnancy, whether it's a cow placenta in a supplement? I mean, some women consume, you know, their own placentas or part of them after pregnancy. Do you know anything about that?
I haven't looked into any scientific evidence regarding that. My thought on all supplements really that you're going to consume is making sure that you're getting them from a safe source, a source that does third-party testing to make sure what you're getting is really what's in there, and really working with somebody who is knowledgeable about the supplements to make sure that's something that's right for you.
Okay. Well, I think that's good advice. I think I'd talk to somebody before I took a cow placenta supplement for sure.
Definitely.
Yeah. So we got a question from David. David emails, there is a unique amino acid in collagen, hydroxyproline. Am I saying that right? Okay. We synthesize hydroxyproline in the body from proline using vitamin C. Do you think that consuming exogenous vitamin C will help the body to synthesize more collagen? Anne or Kelly, do either of you have thoughts on that?
Well, that's very true. Vitamin C is a really integral part of collagen synthesis. And so your body does need the vitamin C. But you often get enough vitamin C through your diet. And vitamin C in supplements, we're talking about a water-soluble material. So you'll see supplements with, 1,000 units of vitamin C. But in that case, it's just giving you really expensive pee,
Yeah, your body can't absorb that
right.
fast enough,
So, make sure you get enough vitamin C through your diet. I didn't today, but I usually will make a smoothie for breakfast, and I always put strawberries in it for vitamin C. So, better to get it from your diet than a supplement.
Okay. Well, we got an anonymous email. A dermatologist recommended retinol, but it's really expensive at the drugstore. Are there any alternatives, or is it ultimately worth the investment? What do you think, Kelly?
So it really is worth the investment, but retinol can also be irritating for a lot of people's skin. So there are, at the drugstore, you can get products that have retinoids, what are derivatives of retinol. They are not, of course, as efficacious as the retinol, but they do have some efficacy. And so what's important to keep in mind with retinol and retinoids too is that long-term use, so you want to be consistent and continue using them. So I think there are many great brands at the drugstore that you can get effective retinoids in those as well. So
okay. Well, we will continue our conversation after a short break. This is Cincinnati Edition. You're listening to Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. We're continuing our conversation about the health and beauty market, talking about the claims of various products. My guests are cosmetic chemist and University of Cincinnati adjunct professor Kelly Dobos, UC College of Pharmacy associate professor Ann Metzger, and Yasmin Tayag, a staff writer for The Atlantic. Do you have questions or comments? Give us a call at 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. And one of the things that we hear so much about is protein. It seems like everybody wants more protein. It's in everything. And does the average person get enough protein in their diets? What's the deal with protein?
Yeah, it is everywhere. If you go to the store, you see aisles of protein powders that you can add in. There's protein bars, there's protein cookies, it's added into everything. And most likely, most people are getting enough protein to meet their daily needs. However, upping the protein can be beneficial, especially for people who might be looking to lose weight, who might be, like I said earlier, endurance athletes or lifting weights. It is important for females, especially after menopause, to maintain enough protein to keep the muscle mass, especially if they're doing some resistance training to prevent any osteoporosis or muscle breakdown as they age. So I think protein is important, and it's definitely having its moment. It probably is safe for people to have protein. Again, as we talked about earlier with the vitamin C, getting enough protein through natural food sources is going to be ideal versus using a supplemental protein powder. And again, I'm not a dietitian, but there are dietitians who you can reach out to get specific information on how much protein you need for your daily activities, given what your goals are.
Yeah. Are there any risks to consuming too much protein?
If you have kidney problems, you would want to be careful and talk to your doctor about that first. But for most of us, there's not risks. There is a limit to how much you can absorb at a time, though. So if you want to get extra protein and you put double the amount of protein powder in your smoothie, you're probably not going to absorb it. So again, it's not going to be doing anything extra.
It's more expensive urine, like what Kelly said before. Well, I want to talk about some more of this wacky, I shouldn't say wacky, that sounds judgmental, some of this interesting skincare stuff. Kelly, I keep hearing about salmon sperm. What is that supposed to do? It makes me feel bad for the salmon. I probably shouldn't, but tell us about that.
Yeah, I think, you know, a lot of times the beauty industry will take ingredients maybe that are being investigated in dermatology and other areas and try to bring them into topical cosmetic products. And I think the PDRN is what it might be referred to sometimes in literature of this, the salmon sperm is being used for skin rejuvenation. And I think, you know, in a dermatology sense, they might be able to use other ways to deliver it to the skin where they're looking at microneedling or so forth and trying to aid in the skin rejuvenation. But when it comes to topical products, it's, I think the jury's still out on whether or not it's actually doing anything beyond driving a marketing story. And I think you'll see a lot of cosmetic companies look to create a really new interesting story or some hype around a product. And sometimes we can go a little too far with that before we know the science.
Yasmin, have you done any reporting on that?
Not on salmon sperm, but I'm glad we are talking about it because I am also curious. I do think it's related to what we were talking about with the Korean skincare products earlier. You know, new ingredients in cosmetics seem exciting. You know, there's always this hope, maybe this will be the one that'll work. And I think the more exotic the ingredient, the more appealing.
Yeah. And I, you know, I happen to also have studied marketing a bit. I have a business degree as well as my chemistry degree. And, you know, you're looking for a way to differentiate your product from the competitors. And so you're going to use something new and interesting. But I think that could also be a detriment because I think a few years ago, CBD was really big in cosmetics and skincare. And many brands who went launched with CBD products without really having a true understanding of what it was doing, some of those brands are gone already. So I think, you know, jumping the gun on, you know, the science could be bad as well for, you know, the longevity of an ingredient.
Well, that makes sense. Well, Kelly, we started out this conversation talking about social media, and there are so many cosmetics that are advertised on social media. They seem targeted to your profile, at least certainly for my profile. They make me feel worse every day. Should you trust cosmetics generally that are sold or promoted on TikTok, Facebook, Instagram, all these different places? Or am I, you know, covering this with too broad a brush?
I think it's important to be critical of where your information is coming from about a cosmetic. You know, there are rules that are supposed to be followed for marketing of cosmetic products. You know, they have to be truthful. But when it comes to influencers, you know, influencers are also supposed to follow some rules as well. But because there are just so many of them and they can pop up so quickly that it can be really hard to police those avenues of marketing. So I think it's important to be critical and look at the claims a product is making. If it seems too good to be true, it probably is too good to be true. And keep in mind, there are different types of claims. Is the claim a objective claim where it's been made with some type of scientific measurement? Or is it a subjective claim where they 85% of consumers said their skin looked more resilient? You know, that's a question that consumers were asked on a questionnaire, and it's not as easy to back up as a scientific objective claim.
Yeah. Well, I guess,
would also, oh, I'm sorry.
Oh, no, please, Yasmin.
I would also just note that with a lot of the products being advertised by influencers, a lot of the influencers are also trying to sell the products, and they'll offer like a discount code so you can purchase them and the influencers get a cut. So I think a reasonable rule of thumb would be to be extra critical of a product if you see that the influencer is trying to sell it to you.
Yeah. So there's somebody out there really cashing in on this beef tallow thing, huh, Yasmin?
There are so many discount codes out there, you wouldn't believe it.
Is it hard to find beef tallow on your own? I mean, I don't know.
Hey, there are also videos showing how you can make it yourself.
Oh, okay. That sounds really stinky.
What's really interesting to me is someone who studied also the history of the cosmetics industry, and especially here in Cincinnati, where it used to be a big meatpacking city, mm-hmm. right?
That Porkopolis.
Procter & Gamble grew out of making candles and soap from tallow. You know, that was the original source of materials for soap baking. And we've really come a long way in coming up with like cleaner ingredients that we can make more consistently and that don't smell like beef tallow. So we've come a long way with science, but it seems sometimes things will shift back because it seems more natural. But
yeah, I don't think I want to smell like cow, but maybe that's just me. It's talking about things that are just seem to be everywhere. And what about turmeric? It seems like that's being touted as kind of a cure-all that can do so many things for you. Do you know much about turmeric? Is there any truth to any of that? Or is there any harm in taking it?
Right. So the active ingredient, if you will, in turmeric is going to be curcumin. And that is like kind of the supplement that's marketed. You can get pure turmeric. Turmeric chais are big right now, the natural spice turmeric. There is some data. It probably is a very good anti-inflammatory. So it does have some anti-inflammatory properties, and consuming it in supplement form, provided that you're finding a safe supplement, so maybe one that has certifications with third-party testing to show that it is actually the active ingredient, could be beneficial for some people, but you do still have to be careful. There can be drug interactions with it. There can be side effects in high doses. There have been some case reports of liver damage. So it's something where you'd want to talk with a pharmacist, a physician that knows your history to make sure if it really is a good option for you.
Yeah. I guess with a lot of these supplements, too much of a good thing can be a bad thing, right?
Correct.
Yeah. Okay. Well, again, we're talking about supplements, beauty care, all kinds of stuff for the full hour. If you've got questions or comments, give us a call at 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. Let's talk about weight loss products, too. There are these products marketed by Hims and Hers. And should we have any concerns about starting something like that without consulting with a doctor?
Again, I think the companies that are online, they want to sell you something. They're very good at marketing, and they're very good at pinpointing what they're saying is personalized supplements for you, based on the information that you provide to them. So they might be able to narrow down some things that you feel like might be good options. But again, if you take prescription medications or you have other health history, you really would want to make sure you're checking in with somebody who is familiar with the supplements and familiar with your medication history, your health history, to make sure that they are safe for you.
Makes sense. Well, Yasmin, there was this Hims and Hers Super Bowl ad, and it said, quote, "This system wasn't built to help us. It was built to keep us sick and stuck," end quote. What's the message here? Is the company selling a lifestyle as much as anything?
I think what the company is doing is capitalizing on a common theme in public health messaging right now, which is that they have been trying to make you sick. They have been, you know, preventing you from getting care so that you will buy more stuff. There's a lot of suspicion and mistrust being seeded in our traditional, medical and scientific institutions. And I think a message like that and that Super Bowl ad is, capitalizing on people's fears that they've been lied to, and also at the same time selling a product that will undo the consequences of having been lied to.
Mm. Is that are there risks for the company taking that kind of approach, do you think, Yasmin?
I think it really depends on your political leanings. I think there is a subset of the population that message will really, really resonate. they do feel like they've been lied to. They do feel like systemic issues are the reasons that they are sick or overweight. But I do also think that there is another population that would feel skeptical of that message. But that said, it's a pretty common one right now. And I think if you're a consumer who is already thinking about wanting to lose weight, that, you know, added motivation is not going to hurt sales.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's all about the sales. We know that.
Yeah. Okay. One thing I will note about the weight loss products being sold on a lot of these online platforms is, you know, they're also capitalizing on the popularity of the GLP-1 drugs that have really taken the country by storm, Ozempic, Wegovy. For a long time, and I think some of these platforms are trying to change this, but these companies would not sell those name brand drugs mm-hmm. for weight loss, largely because they're just so expensive. So these companies sell what they call compounded versions of these drugs, which means that they're sort of mixed by an in-house pharmacy, but contain the same active ingredients. And using these compounded versions of the drugs allows the companies to market the products a little bit more loosely to a wider range of people. The traditional, the official drugs are only, they're only approved for certain subsets of people with certain diseases or, you know, over a certain weight. Whereas I'm seeing a lot of platforms pitching GLP-1 drugs for anybody. You know, I'm getting ads online that are like, you don't need to be obese to get GLP-1s. You can use GLP-1s just to get in shape for your sister's wedding. And that is it's alarming to me because that was not how these drugs were. That was not the initial intention of these drugs.
Yeah.
I'll just add that I think there may be some regulation on that coming down so that the compounding of these substances is going to be harder to do. But I agree, like the use of the GLP-1s, what we call for like vanity weight loss, hasn't been studied. They will make you lose weight, but at the same time, the weight loss you see from these products is both fat and muscle weight loss combined. So you're losing muscle at the same time as you're losing fat mass, and that's not what we want. Certainly for patients who have diabetes or who are obese, these drugs have a lot of positive side effects in terms of weight loss, but also combined with better blood sugar control and decreased cardiovascular risk as patients age. But for patients who don't have that risk and aren't obese or have diabetes, I worry about the long-term effects, especially because the majority of people taking that for vanity weight loss are females. And we already know as females age, their muscle mass decreases naturally. So if we're using them in our 40s and 50s, what's that going to look like when we're in our 70s and 80s?
Great point. Well, we will be back to wrap up our conversation after a short break. If you've got questions, now's a good time to call 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. This is Cincinnati Edition. You're tuned to Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. We're back with our discussion about the claims of health and beauty products, and we'll talk about whether there are scams we should watch out for during the holiday shopping. My guests are cosmetic chemist and University of Cincinnati adjunct professor Kelly Dobos, UC College of Pharmacy associate professor Ann Metzger, and Yasmin Tayag, a staff writer for The Atlantic. You can join the conversation. Call 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. We got an email from Abigail who writes, I've read a little about taking silica as a supplement for skincare. What do the guests know about that, and does it help with wrinkles? I'm going to ask if Anne or Kelly, if either of you know anything about that.
So I can talk about, we use silica as a ingredient in, say, color cosmetics like powders or foundations. And in that case, you can have these spherical silica powders that will fill in the wrinkles a little bit on the skin. So kind of like a, we call it optical blurring on the skin. As far as taking as a supplement, I don't know that these are materials that I would be ingesting, but I know, like I said, in topical application, we use them to give the kind of the blurring of fine lines and wrinkles from, you know, foundations and powder products.
It's like that Vaseline on the camera lens that they used to do in the old movies, that kind of that kind of thing. Okay. We got a question from Mary. Mary asks, is Dysport equivalent to Botox when used at a higher dosage? And is there any non-injectable equivalent to Botox, i.e. light therapy, et cetera?
I don't know much about injectables. That would be a good question for a dermatologist. And topically applied materials, you'll see skincare products claim that they have Botox-like peptides and things like that. But when it comes to those peptides, you know, I mentioned earlier, our skin's a really good barrier. It's hard to get through that top layer of the skin, the stratum corneum. And most peptides are large molecules. So we look at molecular weight, how big is it? And then how soluble is it in the lipids around your skin cells? Can they penetrate it? And a lot of these peptides are also water soluble. So topically, a lot of these really don't have a whole lot of concrete science to back up their real efficacy in that Botox-like situation.
Mm-hmm. Yasmin, have you done any reporting on Botox alternatives? Like these light therapy kind of things?
In my reporting on the baby Botox trend, and we can talk about that after, I did learn that there are a range of other, you know, skin firming, tightening processes that, you know, people who are really into maintaining their skin are doing. So light therapy is one of them. And I think it really depends where you're getting that sort of light therapy. So I think there are legitimate uses for light therapy done by a dermatologist, but they will decide, you know, which wavelength of light to use for what specific problem you're trying to fix. But then you also have products such as these red light masks. They're all over social media again. They kind of look like a hockey mask that you put on your face and then they glow underneath with red light. And the idea is that they're supposed to, you know, reduce inflammation, rejuvenate your skin and so on. I don't know how, there's not a ton of research on whether that actually does anything. And, you know, to my earlier point, it really depends on which wavelength of light you're using and what you're trying to treat. But in my research on the face masks, you know, it's sort of a one size fits all situation. And it comes with, you know, a very wide range of beauty claims, reduce inflammation, improve skin brightness and firmness. It's all the things.
Yeah. And with those red light masks, you know, there are some benefits we've seen in dermatology from red light for treating certain skin conditions. But with those masks that are being sold to consumers, you know, the output, the wavelength of light, the intensity of that light, that's not really well controlled. So, you know, what you're getting as a consumer versus if you were going to see a dermatologist who prescribes some sort of red light therapy, it would be very different. So I'd say that, you know, there's such variability in the quality of those red light masks that, you know, they're kind of questionable.
And Yasmin, can you talk briefly about baby Botox? Because when you said that, I thought you were talking about Botox for babies. One of our producers has assured me that is not what you mean.
It's not for infants.
Oh, good.
But it is a little bit for, you know, quote unquote, for young people. So baby Botox is this trend of, rather than getting a large dose of Botox, you know, somewhat later in your life to, you know, treat wrinkles or, you know, form lines that are beginning to form. The idea with baby Botox is that you get smaller doses of Botox starting at a very young age. Some people start like in their late teens. And the idea is that if you get small doses for forever, like your face will not move and therefore you will not form wrinkles in the first place. And that's, it's a really popular trend. And it's a little, I mean, we don't really know what the long-term impact of it is. And it certainly won't stave off all signs of aging. You know, everybody will age regardless of how much Botox you get and how early you start. Your skin will begin to sag. Mm-hmm. But nevertheless, it is really popular among a lot of young people. Like I know I have friends who started in their 20s and are still doing it now in their 30s.
Yeah. And if I could just briefly add the, you know, speaking of Botox, this was just maybe a week or 2 weeks ago, the FDA issued 18 warning letters to companies marketing not Botox because they can't use the name Botox, but they were botulinum toxin injectables. And so when consumers are thinking about going to get Botox today, there's all these smaller clinics or what they call backroom Botox, where you can go to your local salon or maybe even somebody's home and get Botox. And that creates a situation where these, you know, illicit products might be out there that you don't know what's in them and where they're coming from. So you have to be very careful as well where you are getting your injectables from.
Makes sense. And let's talk more about supplements. What about products for better sleep? Is there any evidence to recommend melatonin or magnesium supplements for that?
Actually, I think melatonin and magnesium have some good evidence behind them for better sleep, more natural sleep versus some of the prescription sleep medications or even the over-the-counter medications like the active ingredient in Benadryl, diphenhydramine, is marketed for sleep as well. So I think if you're looking for a supplement for sleep, melatonin or magnesium are going to be safe and effective. Again, with all supplements, you want to make sure you're purchasing a supplement that has a seal by either the U.S. Pharmacopeia or National Science Foundation, that it's certified, third-party tested, and maybe checking with your doctor just in case. Those two medications don't have many drug interactions. But again, for magnesium, especially if you're on any type of antiarrhythmic for your heart or you have heart disease, I would check with your doctor just to make sure there's no interactions. But there is data for both of them to help promote healthy sleep cycles.
Okay. What about creatine to build strength and improve brain health? Is that a supplement that, do we know much about whether that's effective or how effective it is?
Yeah, I think we're seeing that more and more as well, that creatine is effective for both males and females. For a while, it was thought it was more just for males for bodybuilding, but we are seeing that even in smaller doses, like 3 to 5 milligrams, that it can be effective for helping improve muscle, helping recover after workouts. I'm not as familiar with data for brain health, but the creatine, it shouldn't be dangerous. It does not have an effect. If you're taking it just at those smaller doses, that it should be safe for most patients to consume.
Okay. We do have a caller on the line. Hi, Barb. Thanks for calling. What's your question?
Hi. I'm wondering if your panelists could recommend only one product for someone in their 60s with aging skin.
Ooh, great question. What do you think, Kelly?
I really like Neutrogena's products, and I'm not paid at all by them. I will say that to begin with, but I think they make really great, I think it's their rapid wrinkle repair product with retinoids is a really great product. And it is at a reasonable price. I don't think cosmetics have to be very expensive for them to be effective.
Yeah. And you mentioned retinol, but that is one that can kind of be irritating to some people. So
right. And so whenever you're using a product with a retinol or retinoid for the first time, you really want to start slowly, maybe apply every few days and gradually move up to every other day and then, you know, daily.
Okay. Well, thanks for that question, Barb. We appreciate it. So Kelly, some of these skincare routines we see online are like 17 steps long. What do we really need to be doing to take good care of our skin every day? What's the simplest way to approach it?
You know, I think simple is better. And even, you know, being in this industry for 25 years now, I keep my routine very, very simple. I have many products in my bathroom. That's because that's my job, is to evaluate all of them. But cleansing your skin, make sure, you know, you're keeping your skin clean. Apply a moisturizer, just a gentle moisturizer that has something like glycerin in it to bring hydration, and sunscreen. Sunscreen is the most important thing you can do for protecting your skin. You know, so use sunscreen every day, you know, an SPF 13.
Okay.
13, I'm sorry, 30 is what I meant to
30,
say.
30, yeah. Well, and just quickly, are there scams and claims that we should be watching out for when we're holiday shopping? What about with supplements, Anne? Are there things that you watch out for?
Again, the biggest thing I'm watching out for is purchasing a supplement. If you decide that there's a supplement that you want to try that's right for you, making sure it's from a company that does third-party testing so that what is in that supplement is what you're actually getting and there's not fillers or different amounts. The other thing I also look for is proprietary blends. I don't love that because that means that the marketer, whoever makes the drugs, doesn't have to tell you the exact amount of each thing in there. So I really like the ones that have specific doses listed on the back of their bottles.
Okay. What about you, Kelly?
One thing I think right now consumers really need to be careful of is counterfeit cosmetics. So it's become easier for people to manufacture cosmetics and sell them online. So be careful where you're buying from. If the price seems too good to be true for a brand, so you might really be like into Charlotte Tilbury makeup, which is very expensive, or fragrances. If the price is too good to be true, it probably is. So, you know, also look at the retailer. Are they a reputable source? You see a lot of marketplaces today where there's so many brands selling and, you know, maybe Amazon's not really keeping track of everyone who's putting the products out there. And then, look at the reviews for the products, too. If they seem, if people are saying these products might have some problems, or if they seem too generic in their reviews, it might be a problem as well. So,
yeah, you don't want those reviews written by a robot. Okay. Well, I've been talking with cosmetic chemist and University of Cincinnati adjunct professor Kelly Dobos, UC College of Pharmacy associate professor Anne Metzger, and Yasmin Tayag, a staff writer for The Atlantic. Thank you all so much for your time today and for this terrific conversation.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on WBXU. Our producer is Selena Reeder. Associate producer is Harper Carlton. Technical director is Carlos Lopez-Cornu. If you miss our program live, you can find Cincinnati Edition wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Lucy May. Thanks so much for listening.